So I don't know about you, but my day was made just watching the children running a lap around the perimeter of the church, shouting peace to everyone. And I think about, it made me think of when Jesus says, you know, you have to approach your faith like a child. You have to approach God's kingdom like a child. And I just think about what it would look like if we were all that enthusiastic about spreading peace in the world, right? So that just made my day. So thank you, kids, for showing us what that means. So our scripture reading today comes from the book of Genesis, and it's being told in the Book of Belonging, which is a storybook Bible for kids, but honestly for adults. I was reading through it yesterday, and the number of times it made me tear up was surprising and wonderful. And so Anna is in the playground with the book, so that kids, if you want to see the pictures for the book, you can gather around Anna while I read it. And I'm just going to give our little preface that we typically give, that this story tells us that you make God happy just by being you. Before we did anything or said anything, God was delighted with us. But we often forget, and it trips us up. So the Bible is full of stories of God reminding people that they don't need to earn God's delight or hide when they make mistakes. They just have to trust God saying that they belong, that they are beloved, and that they are delightful. Bible stories have been told and retold for thousands of years. There's so much to learn from each and every story. One of the most special things about the Bible is that we can learn something new and true from each retelling. Wise teachers have said it's as though people who love God take turns holding a big, beautiful gemstone. With each retelling, they turn it, and we see God's light sparkle through a new and different way. So whatever you learn from the way that the gem turns in this story, from this retelling, the biggest treasure that I hope you find is this: God is trustworthy, and God's names for you are true. You belong, you are beloved, and you are delightful. A very good song. At first, there was a swirling, watery mess. It was somehow chaotic and empty all at the same time. It was everything and nothing at once. But God began to speak, and God's spirit hovered over the mess like a mother bird over her nest. Or maybe it was more like a deep breath that one takes before launching into song, or like a wind that ushers in the springtime. None of our words seem quite marvelous enough to describe what God's spirit was doing. God sang a love song and life emerged. God took the mess and made it meaningful. God took the emptiness and filled it with goodness. First, God made light and it blazed to life. And God's spirit clapped with delight as God separated the light from the darkness. This is ready. This is good. God decided and went about the holy work of naming, telling the new creations who they are and who they belong to. You will be called day, and you will be called night. Next, God spread out the sky, and it was just as much fun, with all the making and the delight and the naming. God gathered up the water and made room for land. Good, your name is land, and you are sea. And God filled the land with every kind of plant and tree that you could imagine. It was as if God popped the top right off of God's imagination, and then whatever danced to life was loved, delighted in, and named. All things bright and beautiful sang and spun into place. The sun, the moon, stars and planets, good, good, good. Flopping fish to fill the seas, flapping birds to fill the skies, flocks and herds to fill the land, swarming and teeming, spilling and tumbling, good, 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 good. Where there was once an echoing mess, there was now a symphony of sights and sounds. All the jolly jumble of a very fine party. But God wasn't done yet. There were a few guests missing. God made humans next, Eve and Adam. God formed them from the rich red-brown earth and filled them with God's Spirit so they would be like God. They would create and delight and name just like God. They would care for the plants and seas and animals, all things bright and beautiful. Very good, God said, like an artist examining their masterpiece. Or maybe it was like the way a bird considers the nest it has built. Or maybe it was like the way a parent marvels at their newborn baby. None of our words seem quite tender enough to describe God's delight as God looked at the humans. They are beautiful. They're ready. They're just as they should be. I like them and I love them. They're good. After all the creating and delighting and naming, God rested. And God called this resting time Sabbath and declared that it should be celebrated like a little holiday at the end of every week, a reminder of what God did after God made us. Like a mama who snuggles up to enjoy her baby after giving birth, looking over its little ears and tiny fingernails, God stopped and enjoyed the good, good creation. It was as it should be, nothing left to do but be together. And just as you will never stop being your parents' baby, no matter how big you get, God's people will always belong with God, no matter what. God had a dream of togetherness in a world where everything matches the good, good, goodness of God. And guess what? Even though God had finished and creation was ready, the enjoyment was just beginning. In fact, God is still enjoying God's good, good creation and inviting you to enjoy it too. You belong with God. You are loved by God, and you are very good. The wisdom of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I'm going to step away from the podium for a second. Jordan, I'm turning on my lapel. I'm curious for any of the kids or the adults, what did you notice in the telling of this story? You can shout it out or you can raise your hand. What's some? Joy. Yeah. What else? Anything else? The word good. Very often. The word good. Yeah, it was all throughout that. Anything else? Yeah, Mary.
I said day one, day two, day three, day four. It was like one big creation.
Yeah, there wasn't day one, day two, day three, day four. It was just one big creation. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, Mary, because Thursday night at the church school teacher orientation, we read from the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. It was very ordered, very repetitive. There we go. There was that refrain, there was night, there was morning, the first day. Da 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 da. There was night, there was morning, the second day. I mean, we got through it, but it was repetitive. It was a story easily translated into spreadsheet form or a Gantt chart for all you project managers. Now, talking about order from chaos, I don't want to inadvertently reinforce what I think is a common misunderstanding that the creation story in Genesis was simply a reflection of people trying to understand natural phenomena before they had science. And the often unspoken implication of that being that, well, if now we have science, is there a point of our sacred stories? Is there a point for religion? And so that's a misunderstanding about Genesis, and I think it's a misunderstanding about the genre of creation stories in general. You know, creation stories serve to instill and reinforce cultural values, moral values, a sense of shared identity and purpose, for better or for worse. I mean, look at the American creation story, emphasizing individualism and the triumph of the scrappy underdog over a megalomaniacal tyrant. Also downplaying our original sins of racism, indigenous genocide, and chattel slavery. Most scholars agree that the book of Genesis was written around the 500s BC, when the Israelites were living under Babylonian rule. Permeating through their lives was a sense of chaos and fear and powerlessness, much like the chaotic mess that we hear about at the start of the story. As I was sending a message to my PCP earlier this week, asking if there's any way that I can still get a COVID booster, it got me thinking about what our present equivalent of this type of existential chaos would be. Anyone here feeling like things are a little bit chaotic right now? A little monstrous? A little scary? A lot scary? Yeah. And so this story of God making order out of chaos both reflects and reinforces a hope that the God of the Israelites will also triumph over the monster of Babylonian oppression, just like God took this chaos and made it something good. It reflects and reinforces a hope that there is meaning and order and joy still to come. And if you'll permit me just a little bit of nerdiness, the creation story in Genesis isn't what we call a cosmogony, a story seeking to explain how the world was created, but a cosmology, a story seeking to explain why the world was created. Did anyone see the Barbie movie a couple years back? Or listen to Billie Eilish? She has a song that's heavily featured in the Barbie movie and all over TikTok that has the refrain, "What was I made for?" The lyrics, it begins, "I used to float, now I just fall down. I used to know, but I'm not sure now. What was I made for? What was I made for?" That's the existential question at the heart of the biblical creation story. This story doesn't describe the details of celestial or earthly geology. As one of our church school students pointed out this morning, it doesn't talk about God creating Mars. It doesn't describe the details of evolution or of quantum physics, but it does insist at every turn, as Pat pointed out, that at least to God, each creation is good. Good, good, good. And what a relief that is, right? In a culture that somewhat values perfectionism, I have to admit that I am not a perfectionist, and I never have been. I am a firm believer that good enough truly is good enough. And that's sometimes gotten me into trouble. I'm a firm believer that doing your best is about what you can accomplish without sacrificing your physical or mental well-being, not what you're able to accomplish when you neglect it. I think that we don't spend enough time resting and delighting in that plateau phase that comes after an accomplishment before we start thinking about how to make it even better for the next time. And maybe that's because, like many ADHD people, I don't really resonate with feeling accomplished after achieving something or completing a project. I just feel relieved. I used to think that my total comfort with just being good meant that I was lazy. And I know that perfectionism isn't really about trying to be perfect, but is actually about finding fault easily. But I still struggled, and sometimes I still do struggle with feeling like I'm supposed to constantly want to strive to be better at everything. And that if I don't want that, that I'm somehow not living up to my potential, or not living up to my purpose, or not living up to my New England Protestant heritage. But what if being simply good is the purpose? Kent and Susan have often heard me say that I think there's a reason that God indicated God's sense of satisfaction and delight with creation by declaring it not perfect, but good. And there are many words for perfect in the Bible, and they're all over the place, but they are not used in the creation story. Here, it's just good. And if good is good enough for God, surely it can be good enough for me and for us, right? The word translated in this story as good, tov, refers to something joyful and appropriate, something which fulfills the purpose for which it is made. When God, delighting in creation, declares it to be good, to be tov, we see how goodness isn't even really a human construct at all. As one commentary explains, it's a divine attribute embedded in creation itself. That in being loved by God, creation is fulfilling its purpose. It is good already, before having done anything to earn it. Without having to achieve or even desire perfection, creation is loved. Creation is good, good enough for God. And so, turning back to that Billie Eilish song, to that existential question at the heart of our story, we who are made in God's image, what were we made for? How do we fulfill our purpose amidst this swirling chaos of war, oppression, capitalism? It's love, the story tells us. We were created to love and to be loved, created to be creation, created to create. I think that's a pretty relatable concept, right? The idea of creating something just for the sake of loving it, of hoping it gets a chance to love as well. I mean, why do people choose to adopt or foster a child or to make a baby? Love. And kids in the playground, you know, why think about it. Why do people choose to make a friend or to make a toy or to get a pet, right? Does anyone here have a pet? Does anyone here agree that pets are kind of the closest, except for God, that we'll get to understanding truly unconditional love? We do these things, we make these things for love, for enjoyment, for community, to delight, to connect. God so loved us that God decided to live amongst us, to completely and fully embrace God's beloved humanity, to share our hurts and our hopes and our dreams, and to help us to really see and really experience and really learn that kind of good love. Love others as I have loved you, Jesus says. The greatest commandment is love. Love of God, love of your neighbor as yourself. This is the through line of all the other parts of the Bible. Love is the point. Love is the story of the creation of the heavens and the earth, and God saw that it was good. Amen.